insurers. So that's one side of the problem.
We have 15 seconds.
The other side problem is the illegal side, and that's really a law enforcement issue. You know, cracking down on companies, countries like China and Mexico that ship the chemicals that are used to make these horrible and dangerous illegal street drugs.
Well, I want to thank you for being with us, Barry Meyer, author of Painkiller, An Empire of Deceit and the Origin of America's Opioid Epidemic, just out this week, updated and expanded. Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, formerly with The New York Times. That does it for our show. I'll be speaking in Atlanta, Georgia, on Saturday, the 50th anniversary of the Great Speckled Bird, 5 p.m. at the Chosewood Ballroom. Check our website at democracynow.org. Oh, and Democracy Now! Is accepting applications for our paid video production fellowships. Find out more at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feldstein, and Guzder Marine Sheikh. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 8 o'clock. Coming up next on Positively Revolting, guest host Linda Olsen Osterlund discusses the recent decision by the NFL to fine teams whose players kneel during the national anthem.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Engineering Committee will meet on the first Wednesday at 7 p.m.
We're celebrating KBOO's 50th anniversary on June 3rd at 2 p.m. at the Oregon Historical Society's Outdoor Plaza. Join us for music, fun, special guests, and bring a homemade birthday cake to share and help us celebrate. Bike to the party as part of our Pedal Palooza bike ride. The ride begins at 1 p.m. at KBOO, 20 Southeast 8. Come ride your bike from our building to former locations of the radio station and end at the celebratory 50th anniversary of the very day we first switched on our transmitter and began broadcasting to and with the communities of Portland. Again, that's our 50th birthday party on Sunday, June 3rd at 2 p.m. at the Oregon Historical Society, 1200 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information on the party and our history can be found at 50yearsofkboo.fm.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday.
What would you have instead?
No, this is it.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio 90.7 on your dial and 90. Just go to kboo.fm if you're wanting to listen to it on the web or if you are. I am Linda Olsen Osterlund, and I am hosting Positively Revolting Talk Radio this morning. I am a guest host, which I'm very happy to be. I believe Ani will be back next week, so this is the last time I will for this little stint of it. And it is a call-in show. I want to remind you all of that, and I do really like to hear from you, so I'm going to give that number out right now, though I am going to introduce our topic at the beginning. So the number, so you can be ready to dial, is 503-231-8187. And the topic today is our popular cultural struggle on race that's going on right now, and some of the things that have been grabbing the headlines and, you know, are really part of our popular culture. So I'm talking about the cancellation of the Roseanne Barr show, because of some tweets that she did early in the morning one time that were clearly racist, and the response from ABC was to cancel the show. And then the other issue I want to talk about is the NFL and the knee and players kneeling and the recent statement that has come out from the NFL that they're not going to allow the players to kneel out in front of the crowds. So those are the two things we're going to be talking about. I'll give you some facts and information about it, and then really want to hear from you about these really two different struggles, but very, very front page, very much in people's minds, because large swaths of the American public have paid attention to these. Huge numbers, of course, go to NFL games all around the nation, and I believe at its peak, the Roseanne Barr revision show, the one that just got canceled, had 18 million people watching, though its last show only had 10 million, so it was beginning to fade very quickly. But it had another season coming. So what happened with the Roseanne Barr show, if you have not become clear, is that Roseanne Barr began tweeting some stuff that was particularly egregious. And, you know, I will say that I used to have Roseanne's monologue against Arsenio Hall practically memorized. I was so proud of her for taking him on for his fat jokes, and how they had, you know, how picking on someone's body like that is not real comedy and is certainly not cutting edge. And I've always enjoyed Roseanne. I wasn't one of those fans of the show that watched it every time, and after a few years I wasn't. But I thought of it as important and thought of her as important. And I hadn't become aware that she had become, you know, extremely right-wing. But if you want to hear more about how she has been doing that, there was a talk with Glenn Greenwald on the 30th on Democracy Now! That you can go back to and read. But also you can go to her Twitter account and see much of her extremism in her own words. So when the Roseanne Barr show came on, I wanted it to be canceled immediately. And I just want to say that I was really opposed to it being revived, because Roseanne Barr was taking public stands in support of Trump. And so now I'm going to lay out what I really do believe, which is that if you support Trump, you are supporting racism and white supremacy. There's no two ways about it. You can't pretend you're not. You can't say, well, I like this and that about Trump, but I don't like, but I'm not a racist and I don't like hurting black people or any people, Muslims or anyone. But I don't believe that you can do that. If you support Trump, he has brought those issues to the fore in a way never before. He's made himself very clearly, openly racist, saying really vile things about people, Muslims and other immigrants, and about the countries they come from. And as a result of his presidency, there's been a huge uptick in violent crimes against people, Muslims, blacks, anyone that the extreme right thinks is not appropriate for our country, who they don't want in our country. And so I didn't believe for a minute that having a popular show star, whoever it would be, who was a supporter of Trump, was a good idea. And, you know, I was wishing there were, I'm not a really good political organizer. I'm a program host. And so I was hoping there would be someone out there who would organize a boycott on the basis that we didn't want to have this person who clearly collaborates with, you know, with fascism, is my mind, you know, on the top of a show. And we didn't want to have people watching it. I thought it may start to come out in some of the show, though she is not the main writer of the show, so I didn't think she would have free range that way. But apparently there was one show where she had Muslim neighbors that was intended to be positive but really was not. So Roseanne Barr's show was canceled that day. Her comments specifically were the following. The tweet that she made was, quote, "Muslim Brotherhood and Planet of the Apes had a baby equals VJ." She was talking about a woman who, Valerie Jarrett, I believe, who worked for President Obama. And she had before used this Planet of the Apes against an African-American woman in the government before that, Susan Rice. And for those of you who don't know, who I can't imagine who it is, but from the beginning of our racist history in this country, when it came to came to people who came from Africa, they were said to be less than human. They were said to be closer to apes. They looked like apes and they were like apes. They weren't real humans. In fact, I believe that, you know, we thought they were three quarters of a human when it came to that kind of thing, and they were property. And so when she uses apes in a description, and Muslim Brotherhood, others who she has been very vitriolic about Muslims in her tweets in the past. This is clearly a racist. This is clearly a racist tweet, and we don't need that person to have a prominent role in our culture. Now, they may anyway. I can't and won't be able to stop any other individual who wants to, like, start a show with Roseanne. Someone could start on a cable channel a show and have her be the host again. All of that's possible. There's no law against that. But I would rather that they get the news that we want to turn our backs on that kind of speech. And on her point of view, I don't mean that she should not be allowed to Twitter. You know, she can Twitter to her heart's content and express herself all she wants out there for people to hear. But I'm really glad that she's no longer going to have a show on where she may be gaining more and more acolytes who think that her thoughts and behaviors are normal. It's the normalization of those kinds of things. I feel sorry for some of the other actors and, you know, all the people who worked on the crew who lost their job, but I think we're far, far better off not having that show on. The other one I wanted to talk about was what's happening with the NFL Take a Knee stand. The NFL management has gotten together and come out with a statement for how they're going to handle players who would take the knee. And so for those who don't know what that means, there were, and I'm not a big sports watcher. I haven't watched football on TV almost ever as an adult. But what it means is that there were, especially Colin Kaepernick is the player who was with the San Francisco 49ers, who took the stand that with the number of shootings killing black men and women and people of color all over this nation, he felt a need to take a stand to say, this is horrible, it needs to stop. And taking a knee became the way that stand could be taken. It was kneeling down during the national anthem to indicate. One player said he thought of it as taking as when you lower the flag to half mast because of some great tragedy, that they wanted to say respectfully, this is a tragedy in this country, the continued killing with no consequence of black men by the police in different municipalities and entities all over our nation. And so this is what the NFL has come out saying, that they're not going to, they announced on Wednesday that all team and league personnel on the field shall stand and show respect for the flag and the anthem. End quote. And then quote again, a club will be fined if its personnel are on the field and do not stand and show respect for the flag and the anthem. If a player wants not to stand for the anthem, he can stay in the locker room until after the anthem is done. This is forcing the players to go inside. You should know that 70% of the league is made up of black players or mixed race players who identify as black. And so, you know, the racism of the NFL is not being missed. And there's been, of course, lots of stuff going on in various forms of media about this stand. But certainly the NFL players as a whole are not happy about that. So those are the two issues. Those are the two things I want you to call in and talk about. Maybe you're a sports maniac. Maybe you're a Roseanne Barr, or you like to watch those kinds of shows on TV, you know, general comedy. Maybe you don't watch TV at all, and neither of these issues, you know, would have come to you personally from your own taste. But they're issues about the cultural wars we're having over race in this country. And I think that's why they're both so important. They're different, but these are two of the most popular entertainment ways that happen in this country. Watching sports is a big deal. Not for me, like I said, but a big deal. I have lots of friends. It's a big deal. If you just want to try to go into a bar that doesn't have a giant TV, turn to some sporting event. You might miss out here in Portland. It's pretty hard to. They're always on. Even outside when I walk through past a few on Hawthorne. So these are big parts of our culture, really important aspects of our culture. They're places where people turn to look for excitement, entertainment, things that thrill them. You know, people have not just their favorite teams, but their favorite players. And even my sister can give you statistics that would make your head spin. I'm not interested in that kind of thing, though I will say in person I like to watch sports. It's just a not really there for it on TV, and football always seemed a little rough and dangerous to me. So, but that, and then also TV. TV is one of the ways now it's changing. In fact, some people are saying, you know, this is the peak of TV because there are so many different kinds of entities producing television, what gets called as television, and that you can get, you know, via all sorts of services on your computer and have that go through your television if you want to do that. So, you know, these kinds of shows are where we put a lot of our attention, and Roseanne Barr was a big favorite. And for a lot of women, she was really a big favorite because she just, you know, she was one of those I don't take no crap type. And so we really, you know, for me, I really appreciated that. And that's what I appreciated about. And I was a larger woman and overweight when Arsenio Hall, every night on his talk show, would make fun of Roseanne's weight. And when she finally took him on, and in fact, he had to back down, she did an HBO special where she did a monologue about that that was so, wow, so powerful and strong and angry, furious woman about being made fun of about her weight when there was so much else to talk about. And so, you know, maybe you're a Roseanne Barr lover. Maybe you're one who hated her, but please give us a call. It's 503-231-8187. And we have Susan on the line. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning. Hey, I just have a little feedback on your comment, actually.
Sure.
When you were discussing the NFL and mentioned, I believe, that 70% of the players were black, and then you went on to say, or mixed race who identify as black. That doesn't, to me, if someone identifies as black, that's not different than black.
You know, I think you're right.
Out like that.
I think you're right. I heard myself saying, and really I was responding to an article I'd been reading about Kaepernick, where he had expressed himself both as, he has at times expressed himself as mixed race, you know, having parents from two different races, and but clearly identifies as black. And so I agree with you. Black is, in this country, we've said from a racist standpoint, one drop of blood and you're black. But
well,
yes, I hear what you're saying.
Anyway, so if you identify,
yeah, I agree with you that
that's part of that. So just a little feedback. I'll just listen off the phone.
Oh no, I appreciate it, Susan. Thank you. And I believe we now have Harry.
Hi. Greetings and thank you for taking my call. I have a talk about Kaepernick and the protest. When it first started, and people leave out this part. He sat down, right? And so the next time they said, don't sit down, you have to, the veterans actually came to him and said, take a knee. And so the second game, that's what he did. He took a knee. Then everyone, and that's how the controversy started, right? But the veterans told him to take a knee as a thing of respect.
Are you saying the veteran players or veterans of foreign wars?
No, the veterans of foreign wars.
Okay.
Okay, so so that's when he took a knee. So now with this, and so that's what the controversy was on, and he's been blackballed. I mean, no team will pick him up. I mean, they need quarterbacks bad.
Well, in Kaepernick's statistics, I was reading about him, he's a pretty remarkable athlete.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he could be a second, I mean, a backup quarterback or a third-string sport quarterback. I mean, with all the teams, the 26 teams, I think. But and he's been blackballed, so he can't really, you know, hopefully, you know, one of the teams will pick him up. But anyway, so with this new restriction that the NFL put on, what's going to happen is I don't know if everyone remembers 50 years ago during the Mexican, during the Olympics at Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the track runners? They did the Black Power salute.
Yes, they raised their hand, and I think they had black gloves on, didn't they?
Yeah, and they bowed their head.
Right.
So that's what's probably what's going to happen, and when the season starts.
You think the players will go ahead and go on the field, but they'll raise their arm instead of take a knee?
Yeah, that's what they probably, and they'll do the Black Power salute. Remember what happened 50 years ago? That was very dramatic. And hey, they're standing, right? And they're just bowing their head in shame. and raising their fist. And so that should, you know, that's probably what's going to happen. And I heard this on the news, that there a lot of commentators are really upset because the NFL players weren't consulted about this.
No, and I've read different things where the NFL doesn't really feel that their union is representing them properly around these kinds of issues. That, I mean, a lot of the players feel that way. I think it'll be really interesting to see how the choices are made. With regard to Kaepernick, his lawsuit is still going ahead. He's got a, they call it a lawsuit, but it's part of the arbitration process that takes place between the players and the owners.
Yeah.
And he has most recently, there was a big highlight, I believe it was as recently as yesterday or the day before, where someone leaked that they probably have a witness. And one of the things he's charging is that the league conspired with each other to keep him from having a job, that different team owners conspired with each other and were unduly influenced by President Trump. And in fact, they have a quote from Trump that they've been putting out where he, I'll find that quote in a minute, but basically where he says, here it is. It's a quote from Trump that said, he made this quote on a phone call to Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys. He said, "This is a very winning, strong issue for me." According to a sworn deposition by Jones in the Kaepernick arbitration. He said, "Tell everybody you can't win this one. This one lifts me." So there was intense pressure, and he tweeted about it repeatedly from the president on the owners, but the owners apparently are being willing to do this. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm not sure that I have a gauge on how the people who go to these kinds of sporting events feel about this. Apparently, NFL had been losing, its popularity a little bit in the recent time anyway.
That's true, and they're losing their popularity. It's dropped 20% of viewers. And part of the reason, I think majority of the reason, is not because of the protests. Mm-hmm. It's because of the concussions.
Yeah, there's many people who won't put their children into the football ever.
Exactly. Well, that's all I have to say. Oh, one last thing. Last week's show, we mentioned about the referendum in Ireland.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh,
yes.
Yeah, and it passed.
It did, by 2/3.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you, Harry. That was you. I remember that. Thank
okay.
you. Yeah.
Okay. Hey, thank you very much. Sayonara.
Sayonara to you. This is Linda Olson-Osterlund for Positively Rebolting. We're talking about the culture wars around race, specifically the cancellation of the Roseanne show and the NFL controversy that's going on. The latest thing that's come out is that the NFL management has said that they're not going to allow anyone on the field who will not be standing for the anthem, and so that's that issue. And Roseanne Barr's show was canceled because of tweets she made that were overtly racist. I believe we have another caller on the line. I do want to throw that number out again just so you have it. It's 503-231-8187. And is it Pear on the line?
Yeah, that's right.
Hi, Pear. Good morning.
Hey, I don't even have a TV set, so I miss out a lot of this stuff. But I read that one thing Roseanne said trying to defend herself was that Bill Maher had made some remark about Donald Trump being descended from an orangutan or something like that and didn't get called on it. I don't know. I mean, similarly racist remark, or is that just a goofy thing that Maher said?
Well, what do you think? I think it's a disparaging. It's comparing a human to an animal, which most people consider disparaging. I think it's disparaging to the animal. Orangutans are quite intelligent. Maybe they even have a higher IQ in general than Trump himself does. I think it's entirely possible to be really true. Just because they're a different species doesn't mean they're not smart. But
anyway, so I pass it on.
Yeah. Well, the thing that I looked at Bill Maher and his comments about Roseanne Barr, and he is a big fan of hers, loves her, has his criticisms about this particular statement. But I think it's pretty obvious that he was comparing an orangutan, which is a form of ape, of the great apes, to the president, who is a white man.
Mm-hmm.
And the slur that we're talking about, comparing, thinking of, was never the norm in this country for people to think of what they call white people as animals. It was very much the norm, and is still the norm among extreme right-wingers and white supremacists, to compare black people to animals. So there's the obvious difference, and I can't believe that Roseanne didn't know that. She's really trying to pretend she didn't know that, and that she didn't even know Valerie Jarrett was black. But that seems, you know, almost impossible to believe, because when you do start reading the kinds of things she says, she hangs with the kind of people who call Jewish people not human as well.
Mm. Well, you know, when you don't have a TV, that whole world seems very remote and very distant and kind of kind of odd, you know.
Yeah.
It's unreal.
And you know, I do understand not even having a TV at all, but unfortunately that's not the overwhelming majority
that's
of
true.
People in America who are impacted directly by what they hear and see on TV, whether they think they are or not.
Anyway, I'm all in favor of the NFL football players. I'm not a football fan either, but I like what they're doing, and I don't know, it's too bad that Kaepernick can't get a playing gig someplace, you know, maybe in the Canadian Football League or something. I don't know.
I don't know either. So we'll see how it goes. Thank you for your call, Pear.
Sure.
All right, and I believe we now have Edie on the line.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Good morning.
I'm thinking, when it comes to football, my impression was that the purpose of football was for folks to experience, I'm okay, because we have a dominant culture that says everyone is not okay. And the way we're okay is to say, my team is winning against them, I'm better because I'm making them worse. And the idea that when you're stressed, you use violence and teamwork to violence. And that entertainment stops us from just solving the problems that make us feel not okay. And that football was a way in which you get the lower classes to find those people who are men who are the most intelligent, strong, good at teamwork, self-discipline, to redirect them from united rebellion against the status quo. And instead of being a battle a group against the owners, that they become the entertainers, and that we can laugh at them being fools and getting banged up and entertaining us as they become brain damaged so they can't rebel against us. And if that is the whole kind of underlying classism, racism, us versus them fear mentality, then what the owners are doing fits with that. And what I love is that moms are saying, I don't go with this us versus them mentality, and I don't go with my kids being fodder for the military and this nonprofit, this very profitable so-called nonprofit that doesn't pay taxes, being a way to glorify war. I instead am going to be doing something that's healthy for my kids. And therefore, the whole culture shifts in recreation and in teamwork, or maybe losing teamwork. And I think the power of moms making decisions for their kids and their values is shown in the lowered ratings. And we can unite using that power to stand in solidarity with the Paul Robesons, the Copernicus, the, you know, there are folks who are saying, we don't stand for a country that is so oppressive and violent.
Well, you know, I'm not quite sure how to respond to what you're saying, Edie. I do think that you know, there are people that the comment about the concussion issue getting a lot of people to drop football, I think really makes the most sense. And I think that's only going to go forward because no matter how careful they are with their precautions, they're still having concussions. Sometimes with the first hit, with the first tackle that knocks a child down, their brain hits the wall of their head and there's your concussion. That's basically what it is. It's a bruise caused by that. It can happen from other things, but I think that parents, both men and women, don't want their children to be hurt, you know, in the playing of a sport. And I do think, you know, there's lots that can be said philosophically about what is the role of sports in a modern society. But clearly, you know, humans kind of like to get together and see each other compete. And I think that having the teams and the sort of, you know, sense of this is my team and that's your team, I think that it does bring a togetherness. I think the kind of people who that togetherness is greater than, say, some other allegiance they have may not be there, but it certainly may be their favorite entertainment thing. I see my daughter's husband and his family are really huge on sports and, you know, almost ready to paint their faces type. So I think, you know, there's lots of reasons for why sports are there. We didn't personally encourage our children to participate in sports, but they, you know, one did and the other two didn't. My son, he was an individual sports person, so he did skateboarding and that kind of thing. I do believe we have other people on the line. I'd like to get them on the line, but I'm going to introduce one. So hang on there, don't hang up. I'm going to introduce one other topic, which is this taking the knee, of course, struck a chord with young players, football players all over the nation. And in fact, here in Beaverton, a young person took the knee, a young African-American lad took the knee during a football game and got into trouble at school and was told that he was not allowed to take the knee at school. And they had to take that all the way to the ACLU, taking a lawsuit and getting the school to back down because, as a matter of fact, in the school it is freedom of speech because that is a government entity and it cannot abridge his right to express himself by kneeling at the beginning of a sports event. So this has been pushed down. There's plenty of kids I know who've been stopped from taking the knee who nobody's been able to do a lawsuit for them or has helped them get out of that. So that's another issue. You know, these culture wars don't exist in a vacuum. This isn't just happening with the NFL players.
And let's build on the teamwork and the sense of us and I'm uniting to put roof solar panels in mothers and homes. So let's be an us as we work together to care for our aging in place. There's a lot of ways in which we can have a strong sense of us.
Without forming a team to knock against the next one. And that was Edie. Thank you, Edie. And now next we have LJ.
Hey, Linda. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I was at the KBOO open house yesterday. You know, they had
great.
That open house.
Yes, yesterday evening.
And it was it was quite lovely. All right. So anyway, just a couple of quick things. According to what Dave Zirin says, this is a labor issue. This is the owners flexing their muscle to keep the players in line. And that's according to Dave Zirin. All right.
Who is Dave Zirin?
Dave Zirin is a sports writer, kind of to the left of center. He's come out with some he's a great sports expert, but it's a kind of a
Well, it definitely is all playing out between the owners and the players in terms of the what will happen next and who has. It is a labor dispute.
Right. The players are not going to be fined. The team is going to
Right,
be
so they're going to be seen as hurting their team.
Right.
And that's intentional to make the fans turn against them, I think. You know, that mm-hmm. they will be hurting their team. And I don't know how the fans will play out on this. They've been coming down both ways. There's a lot of positive response from fans who do, you know, these the owners can't have it both ways. They like their football stars. They like all the publicity individual stars bring to the NFL. It's more money, but they don't, at the same time, they don't want the fans to like the players, individual players, too much.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see how fans continue to respond to this. Did you have another comment, LJ?
Yeah, I do. Just a couple more quick things. As far as Roseanne's concerned, listen, Disney, who owns ABC, mm-hmm. knew that Roseanne was a racist and an anti-Semite even before they hired her.
Yes, right. And that includes Sarah Gilbert, who I very much like and who became the executive producer of it. She's you know, given the credit for having the brainstorm and starting to pull everything together. And she immediately made a statement about how abhorrent Roseanne's beliefs were and statements were. And I believe that she feels that way and believes that. She's a gay woman. She's right. fought discrimination. However, that doesn't mean that the show should have gone on, and I think that, you know, how much did she know before and why did she dismiss it? I would like her to hear her address that.
Right. Then we have the issue of she blamed her tweet on some sleeping
Ambien
medication that she's taking, and the manufacturer of the drug that she's doing to sleep.
Yes.
Said that racism is not a side effect of that medication.
Of Ambien, yes, I like that. I like that very much. Sorry, millions of people take our medicine, but racism is not a side effect.
All right, number.
Hurry up, LJ. We got two more people on the line.
All right, wait, just one more quick thing.
Okay.
Do you think that Roseanne will now get a position in Donald Trump's cabinet?
I hope not. It's almost possible. Thank you, LJ. And now we have, I believe, Sue on the line.
Hi, Linda.
Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, that orangutan picture that Bill Maher did, that was because of his hair.
Red hair.
He was preparing his hair. So I don't think the ape comparison, well, totally, it's not, what do you call it, the
comparable,
same as,
yeah, not the same
yeah,
at all.
Exactly. And as far as Roseanne's show goes, you know, I went into it very trepidatiously because Roseanne does have that reputation, but I was really hoping she could pull it together because it presented an opportunity to have dialogue between two very warring parties, and I had high hopes for it.
Uh-huh.
But I have to say that every time they really minimized Jackie's feelings and made her look like a shrill, you know, crazy mm-hmm. person when she was being, quote, liberal. So it had a lot of good things, and I think everybody in the show was really hoping that Roseanne could hold it together and for the month.
Yeah.
Because it was obvious the writers were much better than Roseanne was being. So.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying about that. I know that Tom Arnold, her ex-husband, was interviewed about this, and he used to be on the old Roseanne show, and he said, you know, what he said was white trash and a big mouth or something like that. But he basically said, and he clearly still cares for Roseanne, and I believe they still have children. But he said, no, this is her. And if you haven't paid attention to her tweets, then you might not know this. But she's been saying this for years, and that she's been deeply into extreme right wing conspiracies, including supporting Israel, and really vile and racist statements about Arab people as well. And I have read some of those tweets that she's written about those. So, you know, she's now coming out. The statements, most recent statements I've read, is she's saying, I'm not a racist, and those who know me and love me know I'm not. And I think what would be the best thing for her would be if she could look and see, you may not think you're a racist, though I don't know how she thinks that, But you better examine what you say, that this is the face of racism. You can't say the things she says and not be encouraging discrimination and disparagement of other races. It's pretty much the way it goes. Well, thank you, Sue, for calling in. I believe we have one more caller on the line right now. Is that John? Good morning.
Hello.
John.
Good morning.
Thanks for hanging on.
Yeah. I'm going to quote from an Indian teacher. Let's see. Krishnamurti, I think from not that long ago, maybe the 60s, he said, you can't reform the establishment because of the power of the establishment. It will resist you. So I feel like all discussion about little issues add up to trying to reform the system, and it just doesn't work. So we have to revolutionize ourselves individually, and so we've basically been going about it wrong. And Martin Luther King Jr., you know, he warned us, other people have warned us, Yogananda warned us. He said, when he was in America, he said, the spiritual ignorance of this country will be its undoing or downfall. And so you know, I saw a documentary I borrowed from the library. I live in Clark County, and I can't remember the name of it, but it was about sexual abuse in college, colleges, and all these women came out trying to accuse sports figures in their college of being abused or raped, and they were silenced very effectively by their powerful
administrations
and former, what do you call it when a student is a former student,
alumni.
Yeah, they donated lots of money to the college's alumni, and they didn't want to hear their college smeared. So these people, including OJ, who abuse women, go on to join professional sports. I used to watch football and boxing and professional wrestling. You know, the left just needs to resist or reject all violent activities, and we need to get together and do that.
Well, I think that's a really interesting and important point. You know, there was a time in China, you know, in the early years after the revolution, when they said about sports not competition, but cooperation. And so one of the things they didn't like about team sports from the West was the competition, that it was always about beating someone else as opposed to getting better and better and in the skills and performing a better game or a better, you know, doing a better job at a particular kind of sport. And they thought cooperation, you train each other, you get better faster. Competition doesn't do that. And I think it's an interesting thing that we have all these different ways that we compete, and some of them are violent. You know, it's who's the biggest, strongest that wins, like the sports that you were talking about. I don't know how I feel. I've never been drawn to ones that hurt people because, frankly, I hate it when I see a real fight. I was a teenager when, for some reason, a bunch of other teenagers decided to stage a fight out in front of my house, and I saw the blood and I saw the violence and I heard the sound of a hand, you know, a fist smacking into someone else's face, and I never wanted to see another fight in my life. That doesn't mean that I won't stand up and defend people if it's necessary or defend myself, but I really am not interested in watching violence as entertainment. But my sister, who loves sports, loved watching every kind of fight game possible on TV with her husband. And I don't know what to say about it. I would agree with you. You know, it's not, you know, it's not a positive thing to be watching people pummel everybody.
No, we need to recognize that some things, like, say, population explosion that we haven't dealt with. We talked about it a lot in the 60s, and now it's like we've got our heads in the sand about it these days. Violence is just not going away because we think we can reform a few cops when it's like a disease in our culture. And I hate to even call this a culture anymore because it's more like a poison.
Yeah. Well, I think of the violence that's especially racially motivated. It serves the current government in power, and it has always served U.S. governments. And I think that that's one of the reasons why it stays, well, that is the reason that it stays in place so strongly. And cultural ways of manifesting it increase that. I want to thank you very much for calling, John.
Thank you.
And I want to let other people know the number to call. We still have plenty of time to talk about the Roseanne Barr cancellation and or the NFL and taking the knee. But I want to let you know what's coming up the rest of the day here on KBOO. So at 9, it's Pacific Underground, a show for and by the Asian and Pacific Islander communities in the Northwest. At 10, it's Valley Views, talks to dietitian and nutritionist John Wymore about how people can achieve a healthy, satisfying quality of life. If you haven't heard Valley Views, it's one of our newer shows. It comes out of Corvallis, has a great host. I encourage you to stay on the line to get a chance to experience that show, so you can put it in your lineup to listen to. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, it's a Radio Geekly, discusses the resurgence of the monster movie genre. Well, that sounds pretty interesting. And I want to thank all of you KBOO members out there for your support. You are what makes a difference. You know, we went through a recent struggle with our website, a weird kind of hacking happened, and we've been fighting that off. And, you know, you members out there are really what makes the difference. You stick with us and you support us and you pay the money that helps keep the lights on. So we really want to thank you. And we want to keep you informed and get involved. So you can do that by going to kboo.fm and clicking, and not clicking on anything, just come and become a member. So 503-231-8187, that's the number to call if you'd like to get in the discussion about race in popular culture. And I believe we have Rolf on the line.
Oh, hi, Linda.
Good morning, Rolf.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring up on the Bill Maher thing, comparing Trump to an ape is that he was asking for Trump's birth certificate. So it made it a lot more funny that way.
And I forgot, that's right.
That part of it.
Roseanne Barr was a birther. She spread that rumor, and apparently, I mean, I didn't believe anybody believed what they were saying about that. They really thought there was this huge, broad conspiracy to find some guy and make up where he was born so that we could get him to be president.
So Bill Maher was bringing up Trump's, father.
So he was mocking.
Let's see Trump prove that his father's not an orangutan.
Right.
But anyway, I just wanted to mention that.
Yes, well, thank you. I thank you for that. Well,
okay. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye. Yeah, so, and let's just be clear. The difference between calling President Trump an orangutan and calling President Obama any kind of monkey, ape, or so is stark, and here is why it is. Historically, throughout our nation, its history, and Europe's as well, Black people, and I will say also Jewish people, have been considered subhuman. We literally had it written into our laws here. 2/3 of a human, I believe, is what we thought Black people were. So when you're comparing Black people to apes or monkeys, you are saying that they're subhuman. That's the context in which that statement made. When you say it about a white person, the whole context goes away. It could be something completely different. They're itchy. They scratch their pits a lot like little chimpanzees. I don't know, but it wouldn't be the same. And do we have any other callers on the line right now? Oh, we don't have anybody on the line, so please do give us a call. We still have plenty of time to hear you. I think the issues are critically important and aren't going to go away. Roseanne may very well go away. I believe that show is going to go away. I think the head of the organization, I don't know if it was ABC or Disney, was an African-American woman who definitely wanted Roseanne fired. ABC's head is who that is. Sometimes I'll sound like I'm listening to someone else. I am. I'm listening to our wonderful engineer, Ray Bodwell. He's on the boards, as we say here. We always, when you're hearing a show like this, we're in one room and our engineer is in another and we're looking at them through a window. And they tell us stuff in our ear, especially when they have facts that we don't. We really appreciate that. So pick up your phone and give us a call. Weigh in on these issues. Weigh in on race and our culture and how it's being fought out in all these different ways. The number to call is 503-231-8187. Back to the NFL players, I will say that it's very clear that, or to me, it seems like it's very clear that what the owners are saying to the players who are 70% people of color is that you will do exactly what we want. We don't revere you for anything except playing on the field, and we will not consider anything else that you have to say, and you need to shut up and go away. And I think, you know, working in a place where that's the atmosphere can be pretty terrible. I also think that it's more and more revealing about how they feel about the players, and I think that should make a difference in recruitment and everything. So we'll see what happens going forward with that. Right now we have Adam on the line.
Hi. It's really nice to talk to you. Thanks for talking, Linda. I'm glad that we're talking about this subject as a black man from Portland, Oregon.
Uh-huh.
I've been really thinking about this a lot. The other thing about it is just the fact that I find it concerning that with the Roseanne situation, you were talking about her coworker or the writer of the show, Sarah. I find it pretty often that folks who are identified as white will oftentimes like make a lot of excuses for other white folks. It's always really confused me because as a black person, I don't assume innocence of other black people automatically.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with the case of racism that makes it so insidious, it's really difficult to take it seriously when, you know, as a person experiencing it, I can talk about my experience and then someone who's a neutral or third party might kind of like, you know, give the person the benefit of the doubt just because they assume that they're a good person. And then so much is baked into this idea of being a good person, and I think our really like rigid idea of patriotism. And just the contrast between Tim Tebow and Colin Kaepernick is really stark because, I mean, here you have two players that take a knee. And the reasons, you know, it's okay for Tim Tebow to take a knee against abortion and women's rights to choose what to do with their bodies. But it's not okay for Colin Kaepernick to take a knee just protesting police brutality. And not even all cops or the military. It just makes it really hard to buy into this American dream, and I think it's changing for people of color, you know, one day at a time in a cumulative way. So I'm curious to know what you think about that.
When you say change, well, I'd like to ask you a little bit more about what you're saying about changing. When you mentioned this man Tebow, he's a white player who adopted the take a knee about abortion.
Yeah. Yes, a deeply religious player that was, you know, really revered in the news for, like, saving his virginity from marriage and things like that.
Sorry, that made me laugh.
Yeah, I mean, it was a real thing, and we're all just, like, kind of like, oh, tickled by it. And he was actually taking the knee well before Colin did for a stance against abortion, which I thought was funny and misplaced in the NFL, considering that it just has nothing to do.
Yeah, absolutely nothing to do with, you know, with abortion and whether it happens or not, depending on what their insurance plans are, I suppose, is part of it. I don't know the insurance they have for their female employees or the wives of their teammates. I think, you know, I can hear what you say about it being confusing, but I think what you're saying is completely right, that often, especially a public person is given a pass when they say something racist or they act in some way that's racist, or they're given, well, let's re-explain that. That's not what they really meant. And they're such a good person in other ways. But, you know, I'm going to just put it out there. You can be a kind person at your church and even go on Thanksgiving night to give dinners to people who are homeless and still be racist. We are complex human beings.
Yeah. First of all, just living in America, it's a fallacy to believe that one could not be racist.
Yes.
Just because so much of what we understand is based on our ability to place people in these boxes and to expect to know what to expect from them. And I think, you know, as a person of color, and I work in the service industry in Portland, in very like specialized fields. So I work in specialty coffee. And, you know, I see it every single day. And every day I have to prove that I'm able to do this thing with this really widely needed commodity that's grown in these, you know, equatorial places that are produced by people of color that, you know, get discounted wholesale when it comes to like over-the-counter service of it, right?
Right.
But I find it really troubling for all of us, just this idea that to escape racism or to make this kind of like mutually exclusive argument, like I'm not a racist because I'm a good person, it really makes me wonder, like, you know, how do we keep on saying, you know, they're a good person, they couldn't have assaulted this woman, or they're a good person, they couldn't have done this on the job, or, you know, given somebody preferential treatment. I think it's really troubling because I see it, you know, so many times on the left, like the way that I think culturally in Portland we take so many things for granted, like we're all like a liberal community for the most part, but then there's an extreme divide when it comes to especially Israel and Palestine that I find really troubling, because it's like we make these leaps into equivalency where mm-hmm. I agree with the previous caller who was talking about violence and it just needs to be kind of universal that we just do not accept violence, while we can still have these like debates about who's right about the two-state solution when like there are journalists being shot and people being, you know, intentionally paralyzed. I think that, you know, the way that I'm speaking about this issue kind of like reveals like how I feel about it.
Sure.
But honestly, like as a black person who's neither Jewish or, you know, kind of just as a liberal voting black person, I look at the issue with Israel and it makes it hard for me to believe the arguments they make against Palestine when there's kind of like this white nationalism going on there where they don't want
yes.
to accept Ethiopian Jews and other, you know, Jews from African places, and their argument being, well, how many Africans are going to show up in Israel just claiming to be Jewish? Well, I mean,
how many Russians are going to show up in Israel claiming to be Jewish?
That
because that's
my next question.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I've had three individuals that I know travel to Israel with a sort of not already realizing how racist they were and come back and just tell you that it's way more open and blatant the way that Israelis talk about people from Africa and also the way they talk about Arabs. And so, I we are so close to Israel as well. In terms of a country, I think the thing about Portland so wanting to think of itself as a liberal city, it has to stop that pretty darn quick. You know,
right.
I'm kind of, you know, I've lived here for the last 30 years and I've lived in Oregon most of my life, and I'm still fed up with, you know, when I was a child and moved to Pendleton, which is in the eastern Oregon and is near the Umatilla Reservation, Indian Reservation, I can't tell you, really, in the first two or three days I was there in that town, somebody with a jocular, joshing tone, while I'm standing next to my mother, would say, well, little girl, you better watch out for drunk Injuns. And it was totally confusing to me. And I remember I finally got my mom aside, like, Mom, what is this? Am I really, what am I supposed to do to watch out for them? Where are they going to be coming from?
Yeah.
And, you know, she had to tell me, no, this is racist talk. This is anti-Indian talk, and you don't have to pay attention to it.
That's so valuable that you were able to have those conversations as a kid. And I feel like, you know, growing up now, or just, you know, I'm 29 and watching a lot of my peers have kids, and they've grown up in this generation that's like, we don't see color, and so they don't have these talks with their kids. But I think about my experience as, you know, being three or four and my dad talking to me about race and just letting me know, like, these are the challenges you're going to face. This is what people are going to think about you. These are the ways that you have to watch out for yourself and what you might have to do to navigate all of that. And it forced me to develop a skill set and kind of just an awareness about the world that I feel like made me a better person overall. So I really, you know, my heart is really heavy for young white folks who don't
grow up with the same opportunity of just having it be this invisible thing, and it makes the whole privilege discussion later in life make you have to reconcile all that and really just deal with it alone.
It seems like it really is up to our parents to take the responsibility to talk about these issues and let them know and show them clear examples about how racism hurts. I had a really close friend who is African American. She died a few years ago, but I can remember her telling me just a couple stories of where she was surprised when she ran into a racist comment, and it really took her back. And I remember her saying, I could have lived my whole life without having heard that comment. And I remember the pain that it caused. And instead of anger, it was pain she was talking about. And I had had the, I suppose it's also a racist view that, oh, all those black people must be angry all the time about racism. In her case, yeah, she could get angry, but she was just plain hurt.
Yeah.
And racism is hurtful, and we need to have those conversations with our children and our families. I really want to thank you for calling in. I have 10 seconds left, and I have to let you go now.
All right. Take care, Linda.
You too. I want to thank all of you who called in. This has been Linda Olson Osterlund for Positively Revolting, and Ray Bodwell has been our wonderful engineer. And thank you for tuning in to KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Pandit Ramdas Palsule Tabla Show on Friday, June 1st at 7:30 p.m. at the Levin Community Center in Portland. Ramdas Palsule is an accomplished soloist as well as a versatile accompanist on the tabla who has performed widely in the eminent music festivals of India and all over the world. Again, that's the Pandit Ramdas Palsule Tabla Show on Friday, June 1st at 7:30 p.m. at the Levin Community Center, 5431 Northeast 20th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is looking for a 2018 artist in residence. The KBOO Community Radio Artists in Residence Program